the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to episode 113 of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast here on the CBP Media Network. My name still is Joey. His name still is Len. Buddy, what's going on over there? You got some new, didn't really see that when we were talking before the show here. Some new swag behind you there. What do we got? What does that say? Get wrecked or die trying? Should say that.
Got wrecked. It's because of market conditions.
Yeah. I love
quote unquote market conditions. And this one is you will not own your keys and be happy.
Outstanding. We got a lot to talk about tonight, obviously. And I think you and I are going to have some spirited discussions as always. So
yeah, definitely.
Before we get into it, our sponsor, EasyDNS. You guys know Mark. Okay. He was at the conference. He's tweeting out a lot of good stuff. Mark has been friends of the show even before. EasyDNS was a sponsor. They got a lot of good stuff going on over there. You can get domains, DNS, of course, in the name, web hosting, virtual private server hosting, VPS. So if you got a Bitcoin node, BTC Pay server, Nostra Relay, I know a couple of you guys got BTC Pay servers because God bless you all. I see you shilling your stuff on Twitter. Absolutely stellar. You really should move your email over to EasyDNS as well. We haven't done that yet, but eventually Len and I will open CanadianBitcoiners.com, the website, because he did give me his headshot and I haven't done anything with it. So we're going to.
I was a delinquent for a long time, but you know, we're getting into the busy season for a little bit. So it's understood. We'll get to it.
I know we will. I mean, they got more stuff over there. They got GPG for email. So they can't read your stuff. It gets encrypted before the next hop. And then, you know, we always talk about the decentralization and the uncancelability. We like that about Mark. But anyway, you can get all that stuff together. You can get it in a package. You can get it separately. You know, you pick one, a la carte, whatever you want. Just make sure you mention us or use the code CBP Media. And you get, I think, 50% off your first round of purchases, which is pretty good, man. You can't beat that. And of course, I know Mark, you know, he's very humble about Bombthrower, but Bombthrower is a great website that he also runs. You know, I recommend checking that out if you're interested in the stuff that we talk about. That was how we found Mark, and that's why we brought him onto the show for the first time. So yeah, definitely check out EasyDNS. Now, Len, I will say this, okay? We've moved on from sponsors. We've had sponsors that we didn't take, but at least we don't have as bad a record with sponsors as McCormick at this point, right? Which we'll probably get into tonight at some point.
If you want to, I'll be more than happy to unload. But yes, we do not have that type of record. And anybody that does, you should be looking at yourself in the mirror and reevaluating your priorities, because they don't seem to be in the right order for some podcasters out there.
For sure. For sure. So that's our sponsor, Len. Maybe a little housekeeping, and then we'll do Boost and we'll do the price of Bitcoin. So housekeeping. This week, we have two interviews, I think. I have Dave Bradley scheduled for tomorrow. Dave has come on the show about 1,000 times, and I don't know what we're going to talk about, but he asked if we had room for him to come on, and we're booked like months and months in advance. So I said, why don't you just come on this week? And he said, okay. And so we're going to talk tomorrow at 7 o'clock about, I don't know, cattle, maybe the conference out West, maybe, whether or not Dave can squat three wheels. He might be able to. He looks like a pretty stout fella. So we'll see. That'll be a good show. And then Wednesday, I think we're both going to try and hop on, or maybe just you will do it. Now, I don't want to give away too much. Who are we interviewing on Wednesday?
A couple of guys that are in the farming / cattle business. So we get some insight with what's going on with that pertaining to how it's being dealt with in Canada. So I don't want to give the names just in case they don't want to be doxxed. I'm not sure exactly what's the situation, but we'll be talking stuff along those lines. Very interesting stuff. I'll be learning a lot, and I hope you all will learn as well, just like I will.
Dude, it's going to be good. That's a topic that we've kind of danced around a little bit on this show because it comes up once in a while. And obviously in Bitcoin Twitter, there's a focus on meat consumption and agriculture. So great. That should be a good time. Why don't we do this? I'm going to talk to me about the price of Bitcoin here, and then we can hop into Boost and all the other good stuff, and then get into the stories, because God knows we got a lot to talk about tonight. So right now, yeah, USD 26,862.
Yeah, 36,298 in Canadian dollars. And so I'm just going to rhyme off a few of the comments that came in. Number one, we got one from the Apple podcasting front or podcast front. We haven't got one for a while over there. People are just putting reviews. Or
you know why, Len? Because that app sucks. It's a shitty app. Hard to listen to shows over there.
I can't say I don't use it. So, but the Roop and Doug writes in a great, lighthearted, and informative overview of global news related to Bitcoin with two engaging and knowledgeable hosts. Actually also writes in here, the first pod I listened to. So we broke his cherry there. So that's pretty cool. Rander writes in, holy fuck, boys. I just went in to deposit a check at my bank and the teller told me it's going to take 7 business days. I'm so chapped right now. Laugh out loud. 7 days, man. Get ready. Hopefully you get it by the time this podcast comes out. And yeah, use Bitcoin. It's lightning is instant and you just got to wait for the settlement to be done.
What do you say to the bank teller? Like the Lord above built this glorious world in 7 days and it's going to take you that long to just give me the money that I'm owed here? Like, what are we talking about? That's ridiculous. 7 days,
so it's a little bit longer. And considering it's a holiday.
Oh, man.
It is a holiday, so extended even further. So yeah, Mo BTC Dick writes in, with Ledger's self-inflicted gun wound lately, which wallets are you guys loving slash curious about?
We can talk about it. Yeah, I mean, I have a cold card. I got a bunch of shit hanging around my house. I want to talk about the Ledger and the wallet stuff separately because it's a big topic. I think we'll have a lot to say about that.
Yeah, and Jade is pretty good. Really, anything that is going to be air gap, but we'll talk about that a little bit more in depth. Norman Remnant writes in, here for the quarterly bank account undercover shitty audio updates. We did something like that, or you did something like that last week. It was pretty funny. And Norman also writes in, I'm sticking with Brains for now because we had Jan come in from the, he was the co-founder of Brains and discussed
great
his
interview.
Operation.
Great
earlier.
Interview.
And yeah. Norman writes in one more time, Paulie Tremonte holds my seeds. That's good, man. See, trust in your friends.
Lots of maybe breakdown there, but we'll maybe save that for the after show there. I don't really want to know who you're giving your seed to, honestly.
Okay, let's keep that amongst you. Keep that in the bedroom. Anyways, let's move on. We could go right to the stories, Joey, unless you have anything else you want to bring up.
No, let's rip. I am dying. I've been thinking all day about how you are going to put your own touch on introducing this Ledger story. Because this should be the lead story. You were about to ask me where I want to start. I think we should start with Ledger.
Yeah,
and I know you got a take, and I'm interested in hearing how you introduce the story.
No, I think before we even dive into it, we should revisit some of Ledger's recent missteps. And I'm not talking about the 2020 data leak. That was ancient history. It's still pretty bad, unforgivable. But let's talk about stuff that happened in the past 30 days. And number one, we had the Ledger Nano X on-chain bundle. We talked about this where you could have the Ledger on a necklace. In fact, I have my own pseudo version right here, Joey. Let's see if I can whip this guy out. Here it is.
Why are we talking about seeds and whipping it out? What happened to this show? This is a family show, man.
Hey, man. This is strike one when you can wear this shit around your neck and pose as a somebody that's secure and keeping security on you. You're just going to get wrecked. And it's $5 wrench attack. Anyway, strike one. There you go. Also, this past month, they talked about having BSV. Mm-hmm. And they're going to include support for that on the Ledger devices, and they pulled that back claiming it was a mistake. Now, this is pretty bad because remember, BSV, the people behind it, they're involved with a lot of litigation surrounding the Bitcoin developers. So there you go, strike two. And then we also have a vulnerability that was discovered by Ledger. This is for their implementation of the Bitcoin's mini script. And there was an error with that. It would enable some theft. Nothing was reported. So not sure if any person was impacted, but we'll call this one a foul tip. There's still own two in the hole here.
Okay.
All right. And then we go for the strikeout because the Ledger firmware 2.2.1, and this applies only to the Nano X, not to the older, I don't know what you call them, older models, older versions of Ledger.
There's a bunch of them, right? Like the Nano S. Yeah, the Nano S was, I think, the first one I got, and it doesn't. I guess it doesn't work on that model, or the firmware update doesn't apply to that model, but they've released a bunch of other ones in the last 2 or 3 years. And they have, what is the one coming out in the summer? The Stack.
I haven't followed the Ledger team.
The Ledger Stack. And it's like a big like touch screen. I don't know, man. Anyway, go ahead. We'll talk about that, I'm sure.
Well, the firmware 2.2.1 that applies strictly to the Nano X right now, from what I understand. And also comes with some very interesting services, an option called Ledger Recover. And this got lambasted once it was released to the public, the information for this. It's a $10 a month service. You're paying for this. What it is, it's an ID-based security key recovery service for your 24 words. So you can, you know, you don't trust yourself for holding it. You're going to have somebody else hold it, and you're going to pay on top of that. Man, screw the metal plates. We talked about the metal seat plates. Stamping washers is a good one. Even committing to memory. Screw all that shit, man. You're going to pay for them to KYC your stack and potentially getting rugged in the whole process. This is straight from Ledger. I'm not making this shit up. A passport / national identity card issued by the EU, the United Kingdom, Canada, or United States is required to subscribe for this service. You're essentially giving up identification that unequivocally says who owns the fucking Bitcoin. You say, here it is, and you're KYCing it, and you're paying for that. $10 a month for that. That's incredible. And to be honest, if I was advertising for this shitty product here, and like on a podcast, I'd be fucking embarrassed, because there are still people out there advertising for this. They should be pulling this shit right away once they see this. And anybody that's listening to those podcasts out there, you're fucking enabling those people that just, they don't give a shit about the listeners. They are pandering towards the sponsors. That's just another thing I just want to say, those nameless shows. They also say, Ledger says, human readability form of the private key. This is done in 3 encrypted shards and distributed to 3 different custodians. They have Ledger, a crypto custodian firm called CoinCover, and a code escrow company, and it's called Escrow Tech. So those are the 3 shards that are going out, and they're encrypted, and they go there. But ultimately, does it mean there's a backdoor, in my opinion? Yeah, because if they're able to break this up individually, they could combine them and make them whole again and send them out to wherever they want. In fact, who's endorsing Ledger? And I want to thank Bitcoin All Caps for giving this information on Twitter. The National Defense and National Security of France is doing it. He posted a picture from the website that says that the ANSSI, which is what I mentioned, the National Defense and National Security Organization in France, they endorse this. They assist the prime minister, and they provided the information that they could report from this, from Ledger, to their people over there. So it's bullshit that you have national security firms abroad, like in first world countries, that are endorsing this shit and involved with it. So it just goes to show you that this thing is fucked. Anybody that's using it and it continually is going to use it, do something about it. They even say, they tweeted out, they took this tweet back, they deleted it. Technically speaking, it is and always has been possible to write firmware that facilitates key extraction. You have always trusted Ledger not to deploy such firmware, whether you knew it or not. But we have no way to fucking confirm this because it's all closed source. The code, the hardware, everything. So if they deploy a firmware, which is going to be terrible for us, right, we have no way to audit it and confirm this to be the case. We should organize a Ledger bonfire party. That's what I'd love to do. And everybody just throws this shit. Of course, it'd be unenvironmentally because of the fact that all the toxins. But you know what? Maybe we could make an exception for this and not drive our cars for that week. But anyways, even with this, Ledger came with all this garbage. They're not the only ones, too. Fucking even MetaMask. It's another shitty wallet. And I know this kind of I'm going in the weeds here. But they even said they came out of the woodworks to show how shitty of a wallet they have, too. That's an online hot wallet type deal. Their terms of services say that they could withhold funds for taxes. So they say they could reserve the rights to withhold taxes where required. So if you don't pay enough, they could withdraw shit right from your wallet and you're fucking shit out of luck. So stuff like that, I'm putting MetaMask in the same category as Ledger. Zero fucking security. But as a side note, like really, I've talked about it. We've talked about it many, many times. And it's not your keys. It's not your coin. In fact, like that picture over there, where that sign pretty much says it. Really, it's air gapped. That is the way to go. Find a signing device that can provide you an air gap services. Cold card, Jade, whatever. They come to mind. There could be others on the market. Learn how to use Tails Linux. This is very, very important for your security. By doing so and by practicing good privacy, you are furthering the fact that you are not going to get hacked and lose your Bitcoin. So also apply proper entropy. Learn the process. Cold Card has an excellent setup and a write-up called the Cold Core Paranoid. Check it out. Just Google Cold Card Paranoid, and you'll have an excellent setup on how to set it up and roll the dice as many times as possible to ensure you achieve the proper entropy. Another thing, run your own fucking node. You do this, you'd be part of the Bitcoin network. And not just that, you could use Sparrow, Spectre, and you could have them, which the ones I just mentioned, they're open source. You could connect them to your own node and you could broadcast your own transactions. You don't have to rely on anybody else. In the end, really, don't trust shit like Ledger. Move your funds ASAP off this garbage. Put it on something that is better. Don't upgrade the firmware for your Ledger. I know they say it's for the Nano X, but I would say just don't upgrade your firmware. If you have a Ledger, move that shit off. Use Cold Card, use Jade, whatever. Finally, and I say this a lot of times, but I just want to reiterate, don't mix your KYC free Bitcoin with the KYC. If you're going to do it, try to segregate it in one way, shape, or form. But really, Ledger, fuck them. They fucked up big time. No trust in them. And going forward, nobody should have any trust. There's nothing that they could do. There's nothing they could say. There's no action they could do to regain our trust. They are bad actors. They can and they potentially will take your Bitcoin no matter what you do. That is pathetic.
Okay, I want to show you one thing here, okay? This is a tweet from Pascal Gauthier at Ledger, CEO.
Ledger from the World Economic Forum. I would like to start this short video by saying thank you to the World Economic Forum and thank you to the French government for the invitation they kindly extended to Ledger. We feel very privileged to be here this year. I want to leave you with one big idea, is that crypto is at the heart of the debate at Davos. Crypto is here, crypto was at the WEF, crypto was around the WEF, and crypto communities have gathered from around the world to meet here in Davos this week. It was excellent. We had amazing discussions, very good panels. Again, I feel very privileged that I was invited to this year at Davos. I think it's a pivotal year for crypto, and I'm looking forward to be here next year with the crypto community and with you all. Thank you.
Makes sense. You know what? They had the Bud Light team probably giving the PR advice over there. And
so, okay. So that was bad. Okay. That was right before COVID. I gotta be honest with you. I don't have the same harsh view of this that you do. And I don't think that you're necessarily wrong. I think your view is rational, if a little heavy-handed. And I only say that for a few reasons, right? I'm going to try and summarize my thoughts, and I'll give you some context for why I think that maybe this is not quite as bad as everyone thinks. At least not like, it's not the worst thing in the world. Like, we don't have to put this guy on the cross over this, because they're not the company that you and me, you know, they're not our go-to, Len, right? But they're at the top of the funnel for a lot of different people. And they were for us, right? I have a Ledger Nano S or whatever. You have one around your neck, right? It may not be my go-to wallet, but that's something that got me into Bitcoin. I started there and then moved slowly down the funnel to Cold Card and other stuff, right? And so now I know a little more about managing UTXOs and fee management, all these different things, where when I started, I didn't, okay? And so I think there's some value there. I don't know what exactly the value is, and I don't know whether the trade-off is worth it. No one does right now, because we just don't know exactly what that trade-off is. I was listening to Jameson Lopp and Andreas Antonopoulos today. They put out a video, I think, a couple days ago now. And I know Lopp, I've given him a hard time over Grin and stuff like that. And I do think that is, like, you know, completely insane. But Lopp made a good point that I did not hear NVK refute on what Bitcoin did when they had Pascal and Odell and all those guys on there, okay? Firmware on every device can get your private key. Every single device that has a firmware update procedure or a firmware update protocol can get your key from the device 100% of the time. It's beyond a shadow of a doubt, beyond debate. The question is whether or not the other companies, Cold Card is the one I'll talk about since they're friends of the show and they're, you know, I think best in class. The question is whether or not you trust Ledger, to your point, to not put something on the device that pulls seed material off the secure element. I don't know. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. There's, you know, some part of me that says it's an awfully poor business model for a company that clearly realizes most of its clients are not whales to decide to go a route that's going to enable them to steal Bitcoin down the road at the cost of the business. It doesn't make sense to me, game theory wise, right? From just a standard sort of, what is the best way to make money That's not it. It's not stealing from people. That said, I just want to also mention that user security, Len, like, you know, how many, like, what is the distribution when it comes to the people who are using ledgers as far as like where they are in the security curve? You know, like if you're using a ledger or a cold card or a Trezor or whatever, you're in the top, I don't know, what's the number? Top 5% of Bitcoiners, right? Probably. A lot of
I wouldn't have a clue. I have nothing to base on. It could be 1%. It could be 10.
That's my guess. I would guess it's a pretty low number, though. Like, you're near the top. You're the cream of the crop, probably, when it comes to security, privacy, and even general understanding, right? And risk management. If you know enough to, like you mentioned there, stamp out your 24 words, take your seed offline, have a hardware wallet that's not attached to your phone or on an exchange, as Boomer mentioned earlier, you got to be in the top 1%. Everyone else, okay? Everyone else who's not doing hardware storage is doing something worse than what Ledger is offering here. I think that's also basically beyond debate. Everyone else is doing something worse. So if you're in that top 5% and you're doing something better, great. But if you keep your coins on exchange, it's worse than this. If you keep your coins, I don't know, in a hot wallet on your phone, it's worse than this. If you do some kind of, you know, let's say you get too far ahead of yourself, you do a multisig or something crazy you saw online because you panicked looking at Twitter and you can't get back into it later because you don't know it's above you technically, you're worse off. You're worse off. And so while I don't agree that this is a good thing, the idea that it is not a better thing than 80% of people are using, I think is incorrect. I think it's better. Now, the thing that I also want to talk about is this funnel that I mentioned earlier. If you are one of these people who pays Ledger $9 a month, I think you're looking at, or even if you're not, and even if you're one of these people who like has a key but wants to pay the $9 a month, I think part of the funnel function in Bitcoin is this like hive on Twitter where people are told all the time by the hornet's nest, this is bad, here's what you should do instead. And Bitcoiners are great for that. And I've benefited from that. You've benefited from that. Everyone listening, watching, people in the chat, we've all benefited from this, right? Something was too easy. You almost did it until you went to Twitter and there's a bunch of people telling you no, and here's a way to do it yourself. Like you just mentioned there, right? People are going to be listening to this show. They may be thinking about using that service. And what do they hear from you? It's paranoid cold card. Not that hard to do. Go read up on it. It's easy, right? But let's say that you're not one of those people who follows those instructions. Let's say you're one of those people who uses the Ledger key storage service. I still think it's better than a lot of alternatives. It's not great, but it's not better. The other thing I want to note is that that same user, the same kind of like fence sitting user, is in a position where if they look on Twitter and they see panic, and that's what you've seen over the last few days, pure panic, right? Pure insanity. This is crazy. They're going to steal your Bitcoin. There's going to be government subpoena. I've seen government subpoena stories. Pascal's talking about government subpoenas on what Bitcoin did. Like, okay, maybe sometime, who knows? But are we really, like, this is not what people should be thinking about right in this second. And so for that fence-sitting user, the one who's not technically competent enough to go through the paranoid cold card setup or is intimidated by cold card hardware, is intimidated by other hardware, wants to use Ledger Live, wants to use whatever the Ledger app is for your phone, for that user, it is more dangerous to push them into a situation where they have to switch hardware wallets just because there's a possibility that Ledger might get compromised somewhere down the line. You are pushing them into a situation where it is for sure more risky to do something you don't feel technically competent doing in the name of protecting yourself and your money against something that only might happen. And it sure as shit ain't going to happen today. And it sure as shit ain't going to happen tomorrow. Right? So you don't want to push people into that. This is my opinion. You don't want to push people into that situation. That's what I would say. Don't push people into doing this because they're going to make mistakes. They're going to make mistakes in panic. You know, when you set up a new wallet, all the shit you do, right? You wipe it, you restore it, you send, you receive, you pull the SD card, you see if it works on your computer, you do all that stuff, right? You check the Sparrow implementation, you make sure it's not compromised, all that stuff. The person who's thinking about doing the Ledger thing cannot do those things, but will panic and make a mistake trying. And that's what we don't want. That's when we get stories about, well, this Ledger company, everyone told me, Bitcoiners all told me I was going to lose my money and I fucked myself. You don't want that. That's bad for Bitcoin. That is bad for Bitcoin. Period. End of story. The other thing that I don't understand, like, these guys who are talking about, like, these huge, I don't want to say huge is the wrong word, but these, like, way left curve or right curve, I should say, possibilities that the government's going to subpoena two of three of the key holders and Ledger and accuse somebody of drug trafficking when it's not a real crime. Man, like, I got news for you if you're one of these people who thinks this, okay? The government would much rather kick your fucking door down, freeze your bank account, kill your fucking dog, and put you in a cell until you give them the keys on a platter. They would much rather do that. It's much easier, okay? If you give these other guys your keys, if they're looking for you anyway, it's going to be harder to get it from these other companies than it would be to just make you do it, and it'd be a lot more pleasant too. So I don't understand these people who say, well, what happens if they get subpoenaed? Well, you know what? If they get subpoenaed looking for you, that's going to be the least of your problems. The least of your problems. If you're really worried about that, then memorize your 12 words. Like Len says, use your prison wallet instead. That's air-gapped in a, you know, certain regard. And go from there. But this idea that you got to worry about international subpoenas across borders, I just don't see it, man. I think that that's it's pretty far out on the curve for the moment, okay? If you have an older Ledger device, like I said, the memory to execute this function. Again, this is Jameson saying this, not me. The memory to execute this function doesn't exist on those older devices. So if you got the one that Len has around his neck and you don't want to switch, you're not comfortable switching right now, don't. You don't have to. I personally wouldn't worry about it if I was you guys that much. I almost hate that I'm saying it on the air, because if I'm wrong about this, it'll come back to bite me in the ass for sure. But these other guys know more about this than I do. And it's easy to get wrapped up in the hive mind when stuff like this comes along. And it's easy to want to do something, right? The urge, we always talk about this on the show when it comes to governments, right? When they're trying to, you know, fight inflation, they just need to do something. They need people to think they're doing something, because that's what everyone wants. That's the human instinct. We got to do something. Something has happened. I have to respond somehow. You don't have to respond, man. If you got a Ledger device that's one of these older ones, your hardware can't do this anyway, okay? You got the same vulnerabilities you had 2 weeks ago, 2 years ago, whatever, 2 months ago. If you got a device that can handle this stuff, don't do the update. If you still feel uncertain listening to me and Len talk about it, go watch Jameson and Andreas. It's on Andreas's YouTube channel. It's like an hour long. It's worth it. They go into some detail. But if you are someone who is competent, okay, someone who knows Bitcoin and maybe has an old wallet, like we do, right, with some old Bitcoin on it. It's on a Ledger. It's on a Trezor. Even Trezor's got these problems and more, by the way. You can always just go through one of these guides. There's a ton of air-gapped wallets, right? Keystone makes a pretty good air-gapped wallet. Cold Card makes the one that's best in class, Canadian-made, all that good stuff. Obviously, we're friends with D and MVK. Celia's been in the chat here a bunch. There's options for you. Just the thing that I would say is just be careful not to make a mistake in a frenzy, because there's no need for frenzy here. You've done well to protect your Bitcoin so far. Don't err because a bunch of people who you don't know on Twitter are raising a stink in the comments of every Pascal tweet. Don't do it. Len, what do you think? How wrong am I?
Strive for better. Don't settle for garbage, because when you do, those are fiat solutions. They don't work for me. It's just like putting your money in a bank account.
Isn't it better though?
Well, okay, collateralized.
Go ahead. Isn't it better than I don't know what the number is, but fuck, it can't be more than 15%. Like on the top end, 15% of the people that hold Bitcoin have one of these hardware wallets. If you can get someone who doesn't have a hardware wallet to get a Ledger and use this service, is it not better than keeping it on an exchange? Is it not better than keeping it in a blue wallet? Is that better? I think instead of saying striving for better, I would say don't let perfect be the enemy of better, because that's where I think people are coming down on this. And maybe I'm the one who's wrong about this, but I look at all this and what do I see? I see a bunch of people now who are thinking about, I got to take all my Bitcoin off my Ledger. You don't have to right now. Wait a day.
Why? You have no documented evidence to prove that the code is secure. It is all closed source. It is closed trust source. Me, bro mentality. That doesn't work for Bitcoiners. We verify, we don't trust. When we start verifying, put your money in the bank, leave it there, and trust them to keep it safe. It is not. That is the same type of mentality that brought us to this point. We should strive and demand better. We could do it. We are a well-educated society. This is not 1950s where you show somebody a laptop, it would be something like they're landing on the moon. Everybody is aware of this shit. It is easy to teach people this kind of stuff because we are all technically, or the majority of people are technically inclined. This isn't rocket science.
It's risky, though. It's more risky than learning how to use a phone. Like, that's the problem. It's not the technical inclination. It's the risk.
When you're talking about securing your wealth, you will put so much effort to ensure that it doesn't get lost. And that is the effort we should all put collectively and demand from these companies. This garbage provided from Ledger is absolute trash. Nobody should trust it going forward. New or old device, updated or not. My opinion, move your fucking money, move your Bitcoin off that ASAP. Learn how to use something like a cold card. Learn how to use something like a Jade. Anything that's air gapped, this is the way to go. Anything else, you're risking your funds. The trust me, bro, doesn't work for me. Doesn't work for Bitcoiners. That's the reality.
I like it. That's good. That's a good spirited, some disagreement on the details there, but I think overall we're on the same page. Good. These guys this service should not be available. It shouldn't be available. Yeah,
let's get rid of it.
It's you know, and the other thing too, like on the side of just kind of the messaging, why does this guy keep saying that the problem was with the rollout messaging? It's with the product. It's not with the messaging.
Bud Light PR team that fucking gave him the wrong. I'm telling you, they hired the wrong firm.
And they're going back and deleting tweets like that. To me, you don't do that. Just don't do it, man. Just own it. Like, yeah, this was 2 years ago. We fucked this up. It was a low level, you know, support guy, whatever. Like, why, man? The other thing too that I'll say, just one last thing here, okay? For a guy like Pascal to go on Pete's show, the people listening to Pete's show either don't use a Ledger or don't care. That's not the audience you need to talk to. You need to talk to the people who you are selling the product to, who think they bought something that's not the current iteration of the product. Like you thought you bought something where the firmware didn't install. And I'll bite from Andreas here again. The feature may not be on, but it is in now. And so if I just think these guys, and you and me talked about this offline, maybe on Friday, like the funniest thing about the old devices not doing any of this stuff is that you can clearly see that when they first made the stuff, they only cared about one thing. It was the mission, right? And since they've added all kinds of shit, like we were joking about this a little while ago, like the Ledger Live app now, have you seen all the stuff on there? It's like, it looks like an arcade game. It looks like it's like the Steam homepage. Like everything's always, you can stake and save and learn and earn and yield and this. There's nothing there about like, here's how you manage UTXO. Here's how you manage fees. There's nothing there. There's nothing there, man. And so I don't know. Poor marketing, poor rollout, poor product. They could focus on a lot of other stuff. I'll just note one more thing before I forget. Another thing I hear people saying is Ledger should roll out a Bitcoin-only firmware. The cat's out of the bag, man. If you're one of the people who cares about the firmware and you see what they've done here, why would you trust a Bitcoin-only firmware? Why would you trust it, right?
I 100% agree with that. In my opinion, I mean, I've said it already, the trust is lost and you shouldn't have any to begin with. And when you're trusting something which is so dear as Bitcoin with it, I mean, and they do these shenanigans, forget it. They're just a lost cause. And yeah, keep on sponsoring podcasts for those normies out there.
We got, so we had that disagreement. Now I think we're going to disagree on the conference. Is that next?
Okay, let's not talk more about the conference as a whole. Let's talk about one specific item on the conference. And I'll be very brief because we've talked offline and I think we're in polar opposites on this. And I'll take the higher ground for the very beginning, and it will be very brief because obviously what I'm mentioning here is RFK Jr.'s speech at the Bitcoin conference. And this, it got a lot of great praise from people. People loved his speech. And for those who are unaware, if you're living under a rock, this is a gentleman from the Kennedy clan, and he's trying to run for president. and become the Dem nominee. So he's going to be going up against Joe Biden, but the incumbent, of course. But that's it about that. Like, everybody else, I hope, understands who he is, what he's about. So the positives about this now, I can say this, Bitcoin is now being talked about in an election cycle and a presidential election cycle, which is pretty damn good. And this potentially might raise awareness with Bitcoin and the potential problems it can solve. And it also showcases that donations through Bitcoin is a viable solution, that it's easy to do. And because of that, there is value to the coin. That is very, very important. And the person that wrote RFK's speech, I think that whoever is did it is, they understand. They know Bitcoin. They understand it, and they're able to articulate it very well. And he was very good at reading it too. He didn't read it, like, if you look at when he was reading, I looked at this. There's one part he just really read, but the rest he was able to rhyme off the top of his head. And the one part he was reading almost verbatim was the fact that Bitcoin mining can be used as a load balance for power generation and stuff along those lines. Anybody that's in Bitcoin understands this. So just, it's going to help me with my justification later on, because the rest I have is more negative, but I'm going to leave that. Joey, talk about what your side, because I think it's mostly positive and I don't want to shit on this just yet.
Yeah, I don't. Okay. So I do want to talk about the conference broadly, because I have, you know, people who are maybe not like near and dear, but like friends of the show for sure. I would count Mark Goodman as a friend. Like, I talk to him on Twitter with some regularity. Well, I want to talk about the conference, but when it comes to RFK, the problem is, I think, I don't want to paint your position. Like, I don't want to describe your position, because I want you to do it. But my understanding of your position is that we shouldn't care. Is care the right word? We shouldn't care whether or not this guy likes Bitcoin, because he's just using it for political gains. I have that right?
It's more than that, but you're touching the surface.
I think the thing that bothers me about that, I mean, and you can paint some details on that for me, but the thing that bothers me about that position is, like, if I had only found out about Bitcoin recently and I started talking about it and I happened to be running for president, I wouldn't want people to paint me as a con man because I only just started talking about it in the last year, 6 months or whatever, and I never said anything about it before that, and I never cared about Bitcoin. No one can see any public statements I've given about Bitcoin. There's no tweets. There's no nothing. If I just found out about it, like, yeah, maybe I'll start talking about it now. To your point, he for sure has a speechwriter, because it was a very well done speech, I will say, right? But the thing that I think is important is that the guy seems to understand about Bitcoin, you know, the important aspects of it. He's talking about it in a way that's not entirely just rehashed points. You know, this idea that it's one of the elements of a free future and things like that. You hear a lot of things about Bitcoin from politicians, but that's not typically one of them. A lot of stuff about inflation, debasement, all this sort of stuff. But this is a different talking point, which I like to see. And I know from listening to him other times that his broad platform, I'm not going to get into whether or not I think, you know, vaccines cause autism. I have no idea. I don't care. If I look at his economic stances, his stances on resource generation, his stances on nation building and sovereignty, this guy looks to me like a guy who understood Bitcoin maybe before he knew the ins and outs of BTC, the asset. And I'm happy with that. I don't want to hold it against him. They just started talking about it, but you have a different view. So what is it?
Well, before we can even go into it, I mean, we discussed quickly on him and, you know, the Russiagate conspiracy and his support for Clinton. That just goes to show you that he was towing the party line. So you really can't fault him for that. But at the flip side, he was towing the party line too. So that's something to take into consideration. Really, I mean, what we're dealing here is about the establishment and potentially giving up control of the establishment. And I don't think that anybody that's in it is going to want to give up the two-party rule system. That's number one. I think that whoever's in this two-party rule system is advantageous, and they want to make sure they keep this for as much as possible. So that's one side of control that they want to keep. The other side of the control is maintaining monetary policy. I'm very positive that they, when I say they, it's the people that are in that circle, they don't want to give it up. It's a high amount of leverage, a high amount of power. Giving that up, it's gone forever. So they're going to do whatever they can to keep that. And I understand this. And if I was in their position, I would do the exact same thing. But I'm on the outside looking in, and I'm trying to do whatever I can to bring Bitcoin into the mainstream. And even if they wanted to return to a sounder side of money, sounder money, they could have done it with gold. I mean, really, it's not like they're reinventing the wheel. It's been done in the past. They could easily copy the template. Plus, they have supposedly, I know you always say, a large stack of gold on their balance sheet. So if we believe that to be true, that moving towards a gold standard should be the path of least resistance, and that would be the easiest way for sound money. But speaking more general, that's very general. I want to be more specific with RFK Jr. And this, I'm quoting directly from him. I'm not making this shit up, pulling this out of thin air. Straight quote from him. I got sold on Bitcoin when I saw what happened to the truckers in Ottawa. When did this end? February 20th, 2022. I'd scoured fucking Google. Now, granted, I may have missed something, but I've scoured not one mention of Bitcoin before April 2023, which happens to coincide when he wanted to submit his intention to run for president. So you're talking a 12-13-14-month period of time. He was sold on Bitcoin, but made no fucking public record of this. Now, he is a prominent member of society, right? He's part of the Kennedy clan, has political aspirations. Obviously, he does that. And given that, shouldn't he be willing to try to help his friends and everybody out there? I would, if I was in this position, if I was a caring individual and wanted to ensure people for prosperity and not getting wrecked in the process. Look, in the past 12 months, what did we have? And I'm not going to just rehash history, but this is, and I could miss some. We had the Luna collapse, Celsius, BlockFi, Genesis, Voyager Digital. These were all in a digital asset realm, people getting wrecked. On the fiat side, we have Silvergate, First Republic, Silicon Valley. Each one is a landmark moment. People got fucking wrecked. Still, he, RFK Jr., mentioned zilch, nada, nothing about Bitcoin and about holding onto your Bitcoin as a way to save people. So, based on these facts, let's take this in context now. The trucker situation, it clicked in his head. Okay, May 2022, the CPI, starting from then, I'm going to every month, 8.6%, 9.1%, 8.5%, 8.3%, 8.2%, and so forth. People were getting wrecked by inflation at that time and were continually getting wrecked moving forward as this thing moved on. Still, no mention of buying and holding on to Bitcoin, yet people got wrecked. Okay, so because of that, I call bullshit on the trucker story. Absolute bullshit. He had ample opportunity to bring up Bitcoin. This guy's a Johnny come lately with respect to Bitcoin, or a Robert come lately in this case. But really, I'm looking at what this is. It's really whichever way the winds are blowing. And I'm going to rhyme off some people. Eric Adams, paycheck in Bitcoin, claimed New York City would be, quote, the crypto empire. I'm going to quote somebody in the show. Wasn't me. Bitcoin guy during the campaign, he was a fraud. Okay, I'll take that. Pierre Poilievre went on Breedlove show, talked about reading the Bitcoin standard, it being hard money, you name it. Fuck, he even bought a shawarma with Bitcoin. I was there. I saw it with my own eyes. Now, won't even acknowledge Bitcoin if you bring it up. Why? Because he has aspirations to become prime minister. Miami mayor, Mayor Suarez, Francis Suarez. Miami coin, enough said. Tampa mayor, Jane Castor, she converted her paycheck into Bitcoin. Hasn't mentioned Bitcoin since September 22. Six, seven, 8 months later, nothing about fucking Bitcoin. Okay. Central African Republic, whoever the president is. Sango coin. I'm going to leave it at that. So the list can go on and on. Sure, it's not all bad. There are some good. Bukele, he's in this realm, he's the saint. He's the best of the lot. Maybe Lummis. Lummis is very good, although she has a little bit of a spotty record, because there was the one bill she proposed, it's not really totally Bitcoin related. But you know what? For the most part, I'm going to give her a pass because I think in her heart, she's a Bitcoiner. Ted Cruz, ask the right questions. Maybe a Bitcoiner, but really this list is small. Like, it's so many more garbage than not. And so how can we guarantee that RFK won't become like the majority of the people that I mentioned? And his speech, he had 6 points in his speech. The 6 points are, and I'm going to rhyme them off. The guaranteed to the guaranteed the right to own Bitcoin. We could do that now. The guaranteed the right to run a node. Could do that now. Ensure the right to use electricity as you choose. As an end user, an individual, we could do that now. Granted, businesses may pay 30% more. I'm talking about Bitcoin miners. But you know what? Bitcoin miners are going to be agile businesses. As an individual, it does not impact me. Number four, ensure U.S. remains a global hub of Bitcoin. Okay, maybe that's decent. States seem to be taking the lead on this, but I'll give a pass on that. Number five, we'll recognize that Bitcoin is not a security, but a class in its own. The SEC confirmed it. The CFTC confirmed it. This shit, it's not up for debate. This is set in stone. Number six, we'll consider pardoning Ross Ulbricht. Now, I don't want to get into this. I wasn't there. Nobody here was there. At least I believe nobody was here. So what actually happened, what he actually did, it's up for debate. So this is just a pandering point, in my opinion. So really, we set the bar so fucking low that, and we've been burned many times, that if somebody comes mentioning the word Bitcoin, it's like, oh yeah, this is fantastic. Let's do it. Let's jump on board. But you know what? Like you said, touch the stove too many times. This is it. We fucking had enough. He's had ample opportunity to bring forth Bitcoin. People got wrecked multiple times. Nothing about Bitcoin. But here we are. Good speech. Trust me, bro.
I agree with some of the things you said there, but I disagree with others. Like, you know, if when it comes to this Bitcoin trucker thing, like, I don't know what he means when he says I became a Bitcoiner, you know? Like, there's a lot of people you and me talk about on the show who are Bitcoiners, but they don't talk about Bitcoin. You know what I mean? Certain economists, certain governments, certain people in you know, positions of power, positions of visibility. But we don't necessarily talk about those people as Bitcoiners. We they're like, you know, in spirit, they're Bitcoiners, but they don't talk about Bitcoin. Maybe RFK is the same. I don't know if he is or not, but to me, those other people, like if you told me Eric Adams, who's running for mayor of New York, you know, I think we both saw where that was going pretty early, because you look at the guy's other positions and you think, okay, this guy's, you know, damn near a communist, and you see how that's going over there, like shithole. And so, you know, if you look at some of these other politicians, you think, okay, this is a no-brainer, right? If some Democratic politician, you know, that doesn't have the positions that RFK has been espousing, tells me they're a Bitcoiner, I'm going to have more doubts. But when I have all these other data points, you know, specifically about sovereignty, states' rights, and nation building, right? I look at that and I say, like, this guy is talking the Bitcoin book without saying Bitcoin. And I like that, because I can convince, you know, not that I would do it, but a guy like that can be convinced that Bitcoin is a good thing to have on the books, or a good thing to let people hold as an asset, or a good thing to let flourish or encourage to flourish or incentivize even to flourish. But I can't convince someone who doesn't have those other points. And so when he says he's a Bitcoiner, you know, maybe he's just a guy who realized, hey, we need something else here. And he didn't know exactly what that something else was back then. Or Len, maybe you're right. Maybe he's a total fraud. I have no idea. But from the standpoint of, like, again, I'm not going to paint you as this person, because I know you are not this person, but the people,
you can
who
paint me,
like,
in whatever you want.
Nah, I would never do that. The people who are on Twitter, like, bashing the conference for having this guy, bashing the conference for allowing politicians to speak, you know, like, we don't need politicians, bashing the conference for, you know, basically any element of the BTC Miami 2-day or whatever it was, three or 4-day conference, they didn't agree with or didn't like the way it was run or didn't like people on stage. Like, it's not productive. You and me talking about it, where we're trying to determine here and, you know, sift through the rubble of what this guy's done over the last 5 years to see where he comes down in Bitcoin, that's productive. Talk about the things he's saying. This idea that we got to, like, again, like, crucify people over running a conference, like, come on, it's too much. And so I, you know, maybe we disagree a little bit on RFK, but I'd be curious, you know, what, if we can go there next, what did you think of the conference broadly compared to last year? You'll remember last year we had to do, you know, we did an episode and I was saying that it strayed too far to Sunday service. It was too close to the Vegas Strip now, and it had to go back. Do you think it started that move back, or do you think that it didn't? Do you think it went the wrong direction or stayed in the wrong place?
It's, you know what, I'll say what I have to say, And it may not be truly reflective of what it was like since I didn't attend. So I'm looking at this from afar. And I looked at what was going on over there, and I tended to shy away from watching anything. So maybe, probably what I'm going to say is not factual, because again, I wasn't there and I didn't watch a lot of it, but I'll say some of the pros. Number one, they had one of the world's largest oil companies over there. They had Shell. I think it's a really good thing. And are they, and even with that, are they moving towards the right or wrong direction? I think if anything, they're treading water, or if anywhere they're going worse. And the reason why is, remember, we used to laugh at ETH people, and we had a lot of material to laugh at them. And the one thing, we can't play this card anymore, where we used to laugh at Vitalik showing up on stage dressed in a costume and dancing, because we had the same thing happen at the Bitcoin conference. And if anybody tuned in, it looked like a shitty halftime show from the Super Bowl. And why is this being done on the main stage after RFK has spoken? I do not know. Was money exchanged or anything? I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent here. The conference itself, and it's going to be moving to Nashville next year, it must be very costly to run in Miami. And anything in Miami is very, very costly. And from what I understand, this one wasn't as well attended as previous years. So they didn't rake as much sales through revenue through ticket sales. On top of that, the economy has been tanking, and a lot of companies out there, they don't have the money that they had in previous years for marketing. And even then, Bitcoin companies like mining operations, they've been consolidating, some toppled over, like the biggest ones. And so there's less money out there for that is able to be spent on marketing. So I understand there is a challenge out there to make ends meet. So maybe this is what they did. They had people like Udi and Eric show up, and they gave them an opportunity to speak for a cut of, you know, they exchanged money. I do not know. I'm just speculating at this point. Could be wrong. But it reeks of desperation, and it's really not what Bitcoin's all about. And then second year in a row, at least, maybe more, they had Marathon sponsor, prominent on everything. You see Marathon, remember at one time they were blocking, or they were going to be blocking some transactions on Bitcoin because they weren't to regular. So that doesn't jive well with Bitcoiners, and they're prominently on display. And that's, you know what, this is just, it's corporate stuff. And this, it's too bad it's associated with Bitcoin and it's not just some other type of conference, maybe almost a crypto conference, so to speak, because then they could get away with a lot more. But this is the Bitcoin conference. It should have everything to do with Bitcoiners talking about Bitcoin, what's going on, what's being developed, what's coming down the pipe. But this is just, it's a show, and it's got to be costly, and it's tough for them to make ends meet. And I recognize that. Maybe next year things will change. They're going to go to a less costly venue. And also, they're going to be in an area which has a Bitcoin history. So maybe they could draw upon that and help bring them back to where they should be. But it's going in the wrong direction. And yeah, that's just my two cents. And again, as I said, since I wasn't there, I could be wrong.
If I look at the difference between this year and last year, I think they pulled back on a lot of the spectacle that they had last year. And I fully realize that could be just a function of the price, that it's not as easy to dance, shout, et cetera, when the price is 26 as opposed to when it's 46 or whatever it was. I would also say that, again, like I said this on Twitter the other day, there's a lot of good people that work at Bitcoin Magazine. Are you really going to tell me that Mark, CK, Dave Bailey, like they're not good Bitcoiners? You know, quick reminder for people who are saying these guys are shitcoiners or Ordinals thing is no fucking good. You can disagree with that if you want. Who put the convoy on the cover of the magazine last year when no one else wanted to touch it? Do you remember? It was them.
It was Bitcoin Magazine.
It was them. It was them.
Sure.
And who tried to collect donations for those guys? Those guys tried to do that too. They tried to help out that. There was no more pro-convoy Bitcoin institution than them. And that's saying something, because there's a lot of guys in the space running a lot of podcasts, running a lot of companies, doing a lot of VC work who didn't do the same thing. And those are the guys I see on Twitter talking about how that thing has gone too far south. I would say this year they clawed it back a little bit. And I appreciate the work that they do. And I think that you know, I think about the conferences here this year, obviously like the Canadian conference in Toronto in a couple of weeks and the rodeo, which is in July, I think these are going to be good conferences too. And what we want is a nice, friendly, competitive conference environment where there is an effort by all the organizers to have the highest signal conference, to add the most value for Bitcoiners, and maybe more importantly, to add the most value for Bitcoin. And at the moment, it looks to me like the BTC Mag team heard most of the criticisms from last year, and I think they clawed it back in a responsible way. You know, remember some of the pictures and videos last year of like guys like Justin Sun, you know, shit-faced on a patio with McCormick talking about how everything, Tron's a shit coin, all that other stuff. Like, there was none of that this year. I didn't see a single video of people completely wrecked at that, like on Twitter, any of the Bitcoin Mag stuff, none of the influencers. I didn't see any of it. And to me, that's a good sign. So let's hope it continues. And man, shout out to the BTC Mag guys. Putting together that conference can't be fucking easy. You mentioned there making ends meet in a place like Miami, very difficult. I am 100% sure that contributed to the decision to move the conference. And I'm looking forward to see what happens in Nashville next year. Obviously, Bitcoin Park is there, right? Matt Odell's little project, him and a few others. So I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be popular. And Len, I think we should go, honestly. Because it's close and I haven't seen Nashville. My wife wants to go anyway, and I think I could swing it. You know, maybe we fire it up. What do you think?
It remains to be seen. Right? You know, after watching this conference, there's the bitter taste in my mouth. I do not want to shell out the $299 early bird prices. I think that's what it is for Nashville. I mean, we'll see. We'll talk about this in a later time. Joey, this episode is going to go a little bit longer than normal, just to give you a heads up. I'll still cut a bunch on the leave a bunch on the floor, but there's so much more to talk about. Let's just last Bitcoin related story. Today is Bitcoin Pizza Day. We got our pizza and enjoyed it. Hope everybody else did the same. May 22nd. It's celebrating a transaction that was done in May 22nd, 2010. Yep. 10,000 Bitcoin were traded for two pizza pies. And this is interesting because there is a story I have related to Bitcoin Pizza Day. And this is from CoinDesk. There have been 14 pizza related meme coins issued in the past 24 hours. Four have been confirmed as rug pulls, or a scheme in which money is stolen from investors through any of a number of techniques. And at least five others are suspected of being so-called honeypots, in which an asset can be sold only to the contractor creator. So, the people that making purchase, they can't get rid of anything, so they have to sell it back to the people that created these coins. So there's Pizza Coin. This thing lasted just 8 minutes. This is a record rug pull. And it was before the developers altered the rate of sale tax so that the investors were unable to divest their holdings. So a total of 34 traders bought in for the token for a total of almost one ETH. It was around $1,800. So that's one rug, 8 minute rug pull. Two more, we had ETH Pizza and B Pizza that followed, and with the former reaching a $40,000 market cap and the latter soaring to more than $100,000. Both tokens became unsellable after the contract owner paused transfer and sales. It's too bad we have scammers out there that are trying to take advantage of vulnerable people that are trying to make a buck. Let's be honest, they're shitcoiners. And they're doing it on the good name of Bitcoin Pizza Day. Man, sad. People out there, it's 2023. Fucking read up on shit. Don't fall for this time and time again. I was feeling bad for these people, but you know what? They deserve to have their, this is all satirical. I don't assume it is. They deserve to have their money lost because, you know, you're a fool. You are a fucking fool for buying in, hoping that you're going to make fucking riches on Pizza Coin or ETH Pizza or B Pizza. Fuck you. You know what? I'm happy you lost your money.
You'd be better off buying one of these BRC20s, eh, Len? Those ones you prefer or what?
I don't know if these are BRC20s. I didn't look too much. They could have been. I don't know. So it's hard to say. No, I don't know.
Where'd you get pizza today? Chain or mom and pop?
A chain. My daughter wanted Pizza Nova, so we went there.
I got Pizza Hut yesterday. I was saying in the chat earlier, I am a big fan of the three box. What's it called? It might be called the triple box, something like that.
Is that the $5?
It's two medium, three topping pizzas, a giant chocolate chip cookie, 10 boneless wings, and 5 breadsticks and 2 dips. And honestly, Len, I can eat damn near the whole thing. I'm going to finish the rest of that whole meal after we're done the show, and then I'm going to go to bed on a full stomach of pizza for the second night in a row.
Great way to end the day. Let's move on. Let's talk about Clown World. And there's actually just one story I'll bring up today, unless you want to bring up any more. And it's the debt ceiling talk. And this continues on this day. So Janet Yellen was talking about, she's been talking a lot in the past little while, and rightfully so, because there's a looming date of June 1st in which she claims that the government could run out of money. And I'm going to just rhyme this off for you people. You have the U.S. national debt, which stands a little bit less than $32 trillion, but let's call it $32 trillion. Their deficit annually is going to be $1.5 trillion this year. So that's, they're estimating $1.5 trillion deficit. Revenues around $3.5 trillion, and servicing the debt, it's going to be around $1 trillion. So those are the numbers. Let's take away 8 zeros. 8 is a lot of zeros, by the way, but let's take them away. And let's just say this is a young adult. Okay, this young adult then accumulated a debt of $320,000. This young adult has an annual income of $35,000, but spends $50,000 a year on expenses. Way more they're spending on than what they bring in. The debt that they have is costing this person $10,000 a year. This is a real life example. Just add 8 zeros, and that's the U.S. government. What's the solution for all this if you are this young adult? No, for getting a second job. That's not an equation. Spending less? Fuck that.
Can't.
How about getting rid of the expensive cell phone and getting a cheaper one? No. Downgrading the cell plan coverage? No. How about getting rid of the Disney Plus? Fuck that. Selling the car and taking a bike? No. It's too cold. I don't want to do that. You know what? The answer is increasing the debt load. Not only that, they're still going to give $20 so their people, their friends in Ukraine could buy food, clothing, and ammunition. This is what we're dealing with here. It's really fucking sad. And if you think we're any better over here in Canada, our finance minister, she was in front of a committee and she was talking about our balance sheet. And she was asked repeatedly about the debt load and how much it's going to cost to service it. And ultimately, it was figured out after the fact. She didn't answer this, but it's going to cost us Canadians $34.5 billion to service the debt this year, or about $3.9 million per hour, 24/7. That's a lot of money. But the finance minister was talking about how the debt load is easy to service because we have a good credit rating from agencies and we're in better shape than other G7 countries. Mm-hmm. Like, looking at this, in my eyes, it's like you're playing hockey and you put 8 goals into the net. Not too bad. Everybody's patting each other on the back. Oh, by the way, we let in 10 and lost the game. That's the reality. You can't look at the 8 you scored. You got to look at the end result. You guys lost by a couple of fucking goals. But, you know, in the end, this whole debt ceiling thing that's going on in the States, it's all theater. I don't think that they're going to default. I could be wrong, but it would be the first time in U.S. history, depending on who you listen to. They're rewriting history as they speak. But it's not going to do it. I suspect there's going to be a last-ditch effort at the very end of the 11th hour. They're going to come to an agreement. Oh, yeah, we saved this. We saved this. We're kicking the can down the road. That's the reality. And this will be revisited again later on. It's going to become an election issue, and it should become an election issue. But the reality is this young adult is fucking broke, has no hope in hell, has to declare bankruptcy, and start anew.
Yeah.
That is the situation we're in.
It's pretty wild. Eh? Like, we talk about that with some frequency, like the idea that we're just spending. Like, when you listen to Janet Yellen talk about this stuff and listen to Joe Biden talk about this stuff, even McCarthy, right? Like, there's so little, and it's not just from one party, it's from both. There's so little discussed about what really has to happen, right? Everyone talks about, well, the MAGA Republicans are doing this. Biden had a tweet said that today. Almost unbelievable. This guy living in 8 years ago still. Yellen talking about, we've always paid our debts. No, you haven't. No, you haven't. And no one wants the fucking treasuries, man. They're worthless. And the thing that I think most people understand now, especially in Bitcoin for sure, but I think more broadly as well, it's not about if entitlements, retirement savings have to be touched, modified, and probably condensed, shrunk. It's about when. And I think there's a lot of people in government who think that the when is just any time but now, but it looks to me like it's probably in the next 10 years. Can't keep servicing that debt. One thing that stuck with me from when Preston Pysh was on was this idea that people in developing nations, right, in the global south, are just not going to be interested in buying U.S. debt up anymore. They're not going to do it. And they're not going to help finance U.S. dollar hegemony. And so in turn, they're not going to help finance insane domestic policy in the United States. And as that printer continues to run, you know, there is no way to make up the difference, for example, with tax receipts, right? Like I saw a stat today, I think only about 75% of outlays are covered by tax receipts. And that's probably some funny accounting. I'm sure it's actually much less than that. But you can imagine that as people become more poor, as jobs, you know, decrease, as the employment numbers get worse, as everything, you know, this is all only going one way. And so to your point, some temporary facility, right? They like saying that these days. I'm actually surprised Janet Yellen doesn't come out wearing a t-shirt that says temporary facility sometimes in the style of like the Supreme logo. But I think that she's probably going to have to start because that's where this is going. There's the messaging Biden is talking about 14th Amendment, this, and I got to raise the ceiling other ways, that, and there's all kinds of ways to get around this sort of check and balance of Congress and the United States Senate. Personally, to me and to you and to a lot of people, then, does any of this really matter? What are they doing, right? This is a house of cards. This is not going to go on forever. Everyone knows it. And it seems to me like the road they've been kicking the can down is getting shorter and shorter. It's not lost on me that guys like Peter Schiff have been saying this for 50 years and they've been wrong every time. But there's a lot going on now that wasn't going on 50 years ago. And like you and me have said, I think chief among them, two things really. One is an alternative and something like Bitcoin. And two is the speed at which information spreads and the ease at which people can get, of which people can get digestible versions of why we can't keep printing money, why interest rates can't keep going up. Also, Len, if like the other thing people are not talking about, if the Federal Reserve pauses at the next meeting, what's going to happen to asset prices? No one's going to wait for the cut. This is what people don't get. No one's going to wait for the cut for asset prices to go bonkers, bananas, right? It's going to be an orgy of excess as soon as that pause comes. Everything is going to go to the moon. And, you know, people have talked a lot about how there's only three or four companies holding up the S&P. Guys, it's only going to get worse, right? It's you know, it's like, you know, 20% of the population spending how much of the, you know, GDP, no idea, but it's probably super high. It's 10% of the S&P holding up the rest of the market. It's one government propping up literally every war around the world. It's all shrinking down, and it's nothing sustainable this way. The base is too narrow, and it's going to be a disaster. I just hope that Bitcoin, you know, has a nice flush out to like 5,000 when the panic hits, so I can grab a bunch more and then we're ripping. Because I think that's going to happen. I think that's like a fairly predictable outcome, not financial advice. All this is in jest, but yeah, you get the idea.
Why doesn't anybody call out Janet Yellen or Joe Biden or anybody else?
Did you see Mark Jeftovic's tweet today? He made a good point, not really about the policy or things she was saying, but that every time you look at Janet Yellen speaking, doesn't it kind of look like a deep fake? Like sound like a deep fake of herself? It's like a caricature of herself. Like she's saying things that can't possibly be true. Can't possibly have been given fake to her, written for her. It's false. Yeah, I know. But it's like a ChatGPT meets Midjourney AI video of what like a Treasury secretary should say at a time like this. And it's just like the thing is hallucinating. It's no, really weird.
You know
when
what
he said that, I thought, man, he's spot on. That's exactly what I feel.
I have more faith in like an AI, and I don't have much faith in it to begin with, that it would say some level of truth, so it wouldn't spit out shit like we have never defaulted before. But we talked about Janet Yellen got her PhD in 1971 in economics from, I think, yeah, it was from Harvard, I believe it was, but wherever the fuck she got it from. You would have figured somebody that is getting the PhD on the year in which they suspended the convertibility of gold, or dollars into gold, would understand that that is a technical default. You are saying no to an obligation. That's an obligation you have. You say no. That is technically default. So it's a false. It's false that she's saying every time when Joe Biden says this, and anybody from the White House say that they have never defaulted, or I think they say that they say we have never defaulted before, which in reality they defaulted numerous times in the last century. Granted, this century they didn't default yet, but it's only 23 years into it. So I'm surprised nobody has called him out on their bullshit. It doesn't make sense that nobody would say it. Like, I'd love to see somebody take them to task and say, look, guys, gals, whatever. You guys fucked up. Maybe not you, but your predecessors fucked up and they defaulted. Here's the list. Fucking correct what you're saying.
Have you noticed, Len, that as things have heated up a little bit here, you know who you don't see much of anymore on a day-to-day basis?
Kareem?
KJP, yeah. And I think that I just thought about
Kareem,
that right
Kareem
now.
Is she's no, she's there daily, isn't she?
Have you seen any clips?
I thought she's
her?
Still there.
I mean, I think she is, but I haven't seen any clips. Like, is she just not taking questions about this? Is she not like, I don't know.
You know I'm what? Sure. I think now because, and I could be wrong, because it's just so soon. We're talking 10 days, 8 days, whatever the heck it is, before they claim that they won't have any money. You're going to talk to the head honcho. You're not going to talk to the press secretary. You're going to talk to you're going to talk to Janet Yellen. You're going to talk to Joe Biden. You know, these are the people that are going to be pulling the strings. What a disaster. But let's move on. Let's talk about a few things in Clown World North. And I'm not sure if you saw, but rent in Canada has jumped 9.6% year over year. And the monthly average nationally, granted, this is, you know, it's a very large country we have here, is $2,002 per month. That's the average rent in Canada. Crazy. Remember, this is after tax dollars. But if you want to go more specific, I could give you some. The average asking price for a one bedroom in Vancouver is almost $2,800 for one bedroom. And in Toronto, it's a little bit over $2,500. That's from April 2023. Two bedrooms in Vancouver is $3,700. And in Toronto, it's almost $3,300. That's a lot of money after tax dollars that people are going to have to be spending for rent. And people in that position, they will have much less that they'll be able to put towards savings. And if they have aspirations to buy a home in the future, well, it's just going to be much more difficult doing that because the cost of rent is right now very high and potentially will continue to get much, much higher. In fact, the Bank of Canada this past week said that mortgage payments could spike as much as 40% for people that are going to be renewing their mortgage in the next few years. So people that are locked in. Yeah, that's going to impact a lot of people, myself included, because I'm at a fixed rate right now. And once our mortgage expires and we have to renew it, and if the rates don't change, if they remain where they are right now, it's going to be increased on average, they say, Bank of Canada, 40%. That's a lot of less money that we're going to have discretionary income that we could spend going to the movies, going to the ball game, or doing whatever we want. And that's going to be money that's going to be directed strictly towards home ownership. And that's the reality of it. You know, it's not a guarantee it's going to be cheap forever. And this is it. And as the rates go up, the cost to own the home go up as well. It's too bad. So you're going to be feeling it both in the renter side and the homeowner side. Nobody is spared from this whole garbage.
No, you're going to have people who, again, like these markets are feeding into each other, right? So you can kind of draw the landscape in your head. You're someone who's coming out of university. You have a degree in, Ukrainian dance studies, and you're looking for a job. You need to either save, you know, what's the average price of a home in the GTA? A million? Let's say it's a million.
I'll say so. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to save $250,000 for your down payment. And what to save that 250, it's going to take you, let's say you get a job for, I don't know, what's an average starting salary, 50K, 60K? I have no idea. Probably less if you're in Ukrainian dance. But if you're making 50 or 60K and paying $3,000 a month just for the roof over your head after tax, okay? So your after tax salary at 60K is probably what is it, 40, 35, 40, something like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're paying, you know, another $3,300 a month just to put a roof over your head. Then you got food. What's food cost for one person or two people? Another $100 a week, maybe something like that. That's if
depends
you make
how many
every meal.
One goes
That's
to the
if
food
you make
bank.
Every meal. Exactly. Yeah. And so like you, so not only can you not save for a house, you no one else can save for a house either. And you know, when people who have to renew their mortgages, you realize they can't afford their mortgage anymore, they're going to start renting too. And suddenly that $3,300 for the two bedroom you and your beau are in, that's going to be $3,800 next cycle, or it's going to be $4,200 next cycle. And you know, the city wanted to build some more apartments. They wanted to build, you know, 75 units, but the building four blocks away said it influenced the amount of sun they got during the day. So they kiboshed it. And now you got to walk through, you got to continue walking through a tent city to get to the bus. You know, the first of three you have to take to get to your job, which you don't like, and pay all that money to live in Toronto, Vancouver. Even Hamilton's probably bad. I have no idea what rent costs Hamilton. I bet you it's like $1,600, $1,700 for a one bedroom if I had to take a guess.
I think you're low. That's my opinion.
You think, eh? Yeah. I don't know. I even think like about my mortgage. Like, I'm not gonna say exactly what we pay, but you know, we're in a variable, so it's gone up significantly, Len, but it's not even close to any of the numbers you just fucking said. Like, it's not even close per month. And if you're, this is the other thing I'm always curious about. What is it going to take for these kids and these renters and these, you know, new families to stop looking in the GTA, to stop coming to the GTA? I don't know, honestly, at this point. The jobs, I don't know if there's that many jobs kicking around that everyone just needs a job here and there's jobs available for everybody and they all come here and they work right away and they just got to stay because of the work. But this is no way to live, man. Life is short. You might live 70 years. You're healthy for, you know, you're healthy and independent for 40 of them, maybe, you know, like you're going to spend all your time worried about putting food on the table and what food bank to attend that night. It's not right, man. This is not right. And I think, you know, when we talk about instability and currency issues and stuff like that, this is going to cause instability, right? You and me have talked about the straws that'll break the camel's back. This is one. I don't see a pleasant end to any of this. And I fucking hate being the doomer all the time on the show, but it's almost every story, right? You can clearly see there's a problem. The solution is unpopular, but obvious, and nobody wants to do it because they won't get reelected. And that's the fact of the matter. It's an unfortunate state of affairs, but it's not just here. It's everywhere. It's having these problems. So, you know, what can you say? Buy some more sats and hope for the best. Make sure you got a nice tomato garden, nice tomato, cucumber. What else? What else you grow? You grow arugula? I got to start growing a garden, maybe some arugula.
The problem with any garden, Joey, and we do have a vegetable garden. The growing season here in Southern Ontario, it's rather limited. So you could stagger it. So you'll have stuff that is ready to pick and eat at different points of the growing season, but still come October, you're pretty much done, and you can't really start until June if you're, you know, depending on what you plan. So it's very narrow. So you're still very much reliant on the grocery store or something, because you're not going to be able to grow it at home unless you have like a greenhouse with an S9 in it and you can grow it on stuff all year long.
Other thing here that I'd like to mention tangentially, I didn't want the show to go long because I want to watch LeBron lose tonight, but like this is why family formation is so important, okay? Because with two people, you might be able to save enough money to buy a small home, you know, in a suburb.
Where? How?
I don't know. Move out to Brantford or Kitchener or whatever, right?
Without help? No.
My buddy just sold a house in Brantford for $600,000. And okay. So you presumably you could buy a house for a little less than that. You know what I mean? So with two people, you save for 5 years, maybe you can do it. But I'll tell you how you definitely can't do it. You definitely can't do it alone. And so this is another thing, another problem, right? Like family formation helps with this kind of stuff. And it's a reinforcing flywheel. If you stop, and I'm talking of my book here a little bit because I think about this stuff with some frequency, unfortunately. If you stop people, if you stop incentivizing family formation because people can't afford a house, even if they get a family, they'll never start a family. And if they never start a family, it leads to other societal issues down the road, right? There's no kids to pay for entitlements. There's no kids to take jobs, no kids to train. Like this is difficult stuff to deal with. And it just kind of keeps, you know, the negative internalities keep piling up, right? They compound. And over time, you wind up in the situation you're in now where family formation is at an all-time low. You can't afford a house. You can't afford food, all this stuff. I see people in the chat come to Alberta. Alberta's got cheap housing. I know Claire's home, Alberta, way cheap, 2 hours from Calgary. I don't know where Derek's saying. Derek's in Nevada, cheap. Dude, I have had so many spirited debates with my wife over like a beer on a Friday night, trying to get her to move to Texas. I am so down to go, but she's not into it. So it'll never happen.
But you know, one way to fix this would be some sort of UBI, and then that way people would be able
to fix it right now. Why don't we just do UBH, Universal Basic Houses? Let's give everyone part of it too.
Easy. Because, you know, Bill S. 233, that's the one that's floating in the Senate, and this is a national framework for a guaranteed livable basic income. This has passed the second reading in the Senate and is currently now at the Senate Committee on National Finance. And once it concludes from there, it's going to go back to the Senate for a third reading and then ultimately to the House of Commons for their review and potentially approval. So there may be some wheels to this one. This one I have some legs to actually be approved and turned into law, and there may be some form of UBI, or at least examining the some sort of guaranteed livable basic income in Canada, and which may lead to UBI being released over here. I suspect this is going to be an election issue, maybe not this election cycle, but the one after that. Is my suspicion is that you're going to have one of the two major parties bring this up and use this as a an election policy. That's what I'm thinking. It's going to cost a lot of money to implement, to maintain, and that's potentially going to wreck the Canadian dollar even further than what it has already been wrecked, but whatever.
It's completely nuts, eh? Like, I look across the country, like Rachel Notley had a tweet today or yesterday that I retweeted talking about how energy prices are too high. We need to put a cap on energy prices and start an investigation into why they're too high. Like, why do I need to investigate and examine these things? Like, whether it's UBI or energy prices, I don't need to examine them. I remember years ago, I was out for breakfast with my old man, and we were talking about UBI because Hamilton had a few people who were on the UBI pilot, if you remember, right? It was probably 4 years ago, something like that, 2019.
They did roll it out. It was Ontario, a few cities in Ontario.
They did some, right? And I'm not going to dox this guy, but a guy I went to high school with who's a couple years younger than me was in the paper as a guy who was on the UBI program.
Wow.
And he was saying that, yeah, help me start a business, blah, blah, blah. But as soon as they pulled back the UBI, like the business failed. And
we talked about this.
Did we?
Yeah, we talked about this before. This is totally ringing a bell. And I don't know if we talked about it
on the show. No, you and me talked about it. Yeah. I probably did tell you this at work. And so like we were laughing about this because I was saying to my dad, him and I think the same way. I look at that story and I think that they're trying to get me to feel sympathy for this guy. But the problem is, one, I know the guy. And two, like, even though I hadn't, like, you know, we have a little business going here, even though I hadn't had a business going before, I realized what it takes to start a business. And I also realized that when you start a business, the business either succeeds or it fails. If the business is being paid for by UBI dollars, it's not really a business. It's a hobby. And
or not sustainable.
Like, yeah, whatever, right? Like,
outside money can't afloat.
But this is the kind of drivel that the rag, you know, the Hamilton Spectator prints on a weekly basis, right? Oh, we got to do UBI so this guy can have a business. And absolutely no, we fucking don't. Like, what are you talking about? And I think a lot of people understand this to be the case. The problem, like we always say, Len, is that the demographics in the country are moving in a direction where more people need more help, and they're going to vote for the help. What other choice do they have? I don't blame those people for voting for the help. There's no other option for them. The only things that are presented to them are either starve or UBI. And everything else, you know, as you'd like to say, and as we say on the show often, everything else is too unpopular. The pain will be too great. And because we are in this sort of short-term re-election cycle, this is what we get. Did you see as well that the United Kingdom is talking about price controls?
No, with respect to what?
I think food. So interesting. Continuing the decline.
They can't grow it all internally. Dude,
I was doing my show research. I have like a list of websites that I go to. I'll read, and I saw that story today. I thought, oh my God, I can't believe I missed this. And so I'll just see if I can find it after. I'll send it to you. But like this is happening all over the place. It's like these guys have never thought about what's already been tried, and have never considered that maybe the policies that got us here need to be changed, instead of just continuing to be reactionary and foolishly thinking short term. The damage man, the damage is going to be just unbelievably devastating for so many people who have no other option. They cannot, there's no fix for them, right? And but no one seems to care. They don't get it. And I, you know, honestly, I don't blame them. It's hard. It's really hard to understand.
Last Canadian story, Joey. I want to talk about Saskatchewan. And they would like to continue using their coal plants beyond 2030, but the federal government says that would be illegal. And this is a result of federal regulations that are going to be requiring all coal plants operating within Canada to be closed or converted to natural gas that is equipped with carbon capture systems by the end of 2029. And Canada's current climate plan aims to have electricity in Canada be all emissions free by 2035. And this is causing, obviously, a big issue with the Premier of Saskatchewan, Scott Moe, because he says that they don't have the capacity to meet their electricity requirements if they shut down their coal plants. And the problem I have with this is that Canada, they don't like the coal plants. That's fine. You know, like coal is emits a lot of garbage into the atmosphere. And I don't want to get into the debate about the merits of climate change or anything. There's reality is coal plant emits more than something else.
Yeah.
Like natural gas or something. Okay. Fine. I'm with that. And I could respect that. But Canada, if you look at their coal exports, Canada has reached all-time highs by year of their coal exports. They are exporting more coal now than they ever did before. And this coal isn't just being put back into the earth. It's being used in power plants. And we live, and I'm sorry for anybody out there that are flat earthers. We live in a globe. It's a closed system. If somebody farts, that fart doesn't disappear. It ends up in the atmosphere and it floats around. Now, the same thing with fucking burning carbon for us or burning coal. You could burn it far away. But because we live in a closed system, that will end up in the atmosphere and everybody will feel that if that impacts the environment. So regardless if it's burned here locally in Canada or far away, the impact is going to be the same in the long run if yes. This is what you believe in. So closing coal plants here, but exporting coal at a record pace, they don't jive. You have to say, look, we don't like coal. We're not going to export it. You're not, or I can say, well, we like coal and we'll fucking burn it. You can't do both sides because you achieve nothing in the end. You will let other countries take advantage of coal and we can't. We export it. There may be some benefits to that, but the coal plants that are currently here, they got to be shut down as a result. I look at this type of policy and it makes me wonder, like, what the hell are they trying to achieve? It doesn't make sense, right? Like, yeah. Am I wrong on this?
Or, no.
I don't know. I mean, I look at it. We live in a fucking closed loop here. And if you don't fucking believe it, like, fuck. Like, the coal that's being burned somewhere else, it doesn't just stay there. It fucking floats everywhere else. But whatever, yeah. That's just my thoughts.
I'm with you on that. And, you know, we talked about this before. It's clear that the reason... Again, like whatever you think about climate change, it doesn't really matter to me what you think about climate change, honestly, because the result is the same no matter what. We got to industrialize on the backs of the global south, on the backs of the third world. We're still doing it, by the way, and on their resources. We pillaged, stole, burned, and you know harvested resources from all these places for 200 years, and made it to where we are now. And basically, what we're telling them is you can't do the same thing. This idea that we can't meet our electricity requirements in a first world nation, we're a G7 according to Wikipedia. What does that mean? Does that mean anything to anybody? We should have this figured out. Let us build nuclear. You know why? Let us use coal. It means nothing.
You want to know why?
Nothing. Why?
The GDP of the BRICS nations is going to surpass this year the G7.
Yeah. Yep.
And the BRICS nations is smaller in number than the G7. And they're gonna surpass it in GDP. That's the flippening you're looking at.
The golden, what is it? The golden, what do they say? There's like a golden billion basically on Earth. Is that, I can't remember the term, but basically there's a billion people living with excess. Let's say, the Walmart crowd, the supermarket crowd. Those people, they they don't produce anything, right? And so eventually these countries that produce everything for those billion people are going to say, we don't want the treasuries anymore. We don't want the CAD anymore. We don't care about the photo ops. We don't care about the token gifts. We don't care about whether or not you want us to burn the coal. We're going to do it. And if you don't like it, send a tank here. And that's going to be the end of the story. And like, it's not, I don't think it's that far away. Also, this is just, it's not like I'm some kind of, like Len, no one has ever accused me of being the same kind of international relations mind as Henry Kissinger. But I'll tell you, this just seems like an obvious result. Okay. It's fairly simple. At some point, it's not going to matter. The paper's not going to matter. It's the stuff, the products that are going to matter. And we're getting closer and closer and closer and closer to that all the time. And these guys who think otherwise, like, you know, fighting with the premiers about power grid. This is why the U.S. The U.S. state Fed separation looks so appealing every day, right? Whether it's Bitcoin mining or Bitcoin asset, allowances, whether you can hold it or not at the state level, being decided some places in the United States. This is why it looks appealing, and I think this is, I don't know. What do you? You're kind of more tuned into politics than me. Is there another separatist wave coming here from the West, if not from our usual friends in Quebec as well?
I haven't heard of anything for the past little while.
Dave Bradley's in the chat because Dave, I know, has some connections out West, and maybe I'll talk to him about this tomorrow. But I want to know because it seems to me like it's more and more obvious the gap between the principal set of those two groups has never been wider. It's never been wider. And I can think back to Jason Kenney wearing that "I love oil and gas" hoodie at the Grey Cup years ago. I thought that was so good. I know a lot of my friends hated it, and I just thought, like, why these people? That's what they do out there. They are the only group contributing to the real GDP of the country. Like, this is what we need. This man, we can't give this up, and we're trying to all the time. And now this thing with Premier Mo too. Like, come on, we got to do better than that. We got to do better than that.
Yeah, and bring in Shemp, Curly and Larry, and then we got Mo included, and we got the Stooges. Anyways, let's do the Bitcoin or No Coiner segment of the week. And
it's been an hour and a half. Oh my God.
Yeah, and I put so many stories at that too. A lot of good stories. But I have two No Coiners. I'm not sure if you have a Bitcoiner or No Coiner that you want to bring up.
I think my Bitcoiner of the week. I didn't have this prepared, but the more I've thought about the interviews and the stuff I read about Ledger, my Bitcoiner of the week, I think I'm going to give it to Rodolfo MVK only because he really had a chance to fucking dunk on that Pascal guy during the interview on Pete's show. And it was basically just him and Pascal doing a lot of the talking, and he didn't. I think he was pretty compassionate, tried to paint him in as good a light, as positive a light as possible. And try and save some of his reputation. Truly, truly a guy who had a lot to gain from this whole saga, this whole mess, and seems to be more interested in making sure that people are getting the full picture, even if it's unpopular at the moment. So, yeah, I commend him for that because he didn't have to do that. Certainly didn't have to do it, given that it's probably going to cost him a couple of bucks. So I'm going to give it to MBK, Bitcoiner of the Week.
I'm disappointed he went on that show, to be perfectly honest.
Really?
When you do, yeah. Anybody that goes on that show.
Did you listen to it? You refuse.
Yeah. My beliefs, I cannot bring myself to watch or listen to it. By doing so, I am enabling a scammer to continue scamming. This is what it is. Still with Ledger, we talked about Ledger. And it's going to enable people out there to continue to buy into it. Not just that, shit like Celsius, BlockFi, what else am I? Compass Mining.
Yeah,
a lot of people got wrecked on those things. BlockFi, this is the one that really, really pisses me off, is that somebody pulled their money out of BlockFi, didn't alert anybody, didn't tell his listeners, and then the listeners continued using the service. Got wrecked. What does that tell you about his priorities?
Tough.
And I cannot listen into a show like that. And in my opinion, anybody who goes on to that show is perpetuating that type of action.
We gotta talk to MVK.
to if you want to stop somebody from scamming, you stop altogether. You don't give any resources whatsoever. If you don't like whatever organization, you don't donate money to them. You stop donating money to them. This, you don't donate your time. You stop donating your time. But that's just me. But I have a couple of no-coiners that I like to bring up. And number one is Hotep Jesus.
Oh, man.
And he's number one. And Mr. Jesus was responsible for me bringing this here. It's not your keys, not your coin garbage here. And he was talking about the accountability and responsibility that Bitcoin presents to people. And the current system right now, it offloads these types of tangibles off to somebody else. In this case, you hand off your wealth to banks for them to manage. And that's the way it is right now in the fiat system. And he was saying that there's going to be opportunities which then exist. And it could, maybe there'd be companies out there that could potentially offer some type of insurance package to prevent any sort of scams and give you protection. And he was saying that this type of insurance, if they ever offer to Bitcoiners, he would take advantage of it and use this. And even if it was a 5% fee or anything like that, he would be happy to pay it. And I listen to this. This is truly a not your keys, not your coin situation. If you want to give your keys to somebody else, you might as well use Ledger, because those are the options we have right now. You could use any of their suite of services and you get wrecked in the process. Or look at all the people that use BlockFi, that use Voyager, Celsius, you name it. They all use these type of services. They got fucking wrecked. And this guy is perpetuating. He's saying people should be doing this, using this type of service, and saying that this is something that would be good for Bitcoiners. You know what? He may not be a no-coiner today, but by using a service like this, I can guarantee once he does get rugged, he will be a no-coiner. This is why he's my first no-coiner of the week. Well, but done. I got a second one, and it's somebody that came on our show a little while ago, Mr. Mike Green. And he was talking about how
is being burned here.
We got to call it a spade once a spade a spade, right? And he was talking about how Bitcoin maxis back in the day should have spent more time on what Bitcoin maxis wanted as a monetary system versus memeing out there, have fun staying poor and saying that you're going to be wrecked in the process if you don't adopt our way of doing business. And he believes progress could have been made if Bitcoin maxis at that time presented things with a better argument, almost with an olive branch or velvet glove approach. And he's saying that CBDCs now are a direct result, direct response to Bitcoin. And with this comes privacy or a lack thereof, which is now at stake with the issuance of a CBDC. And really, he's saying if Bitcoiners were more willing to work with those people in control, then maybe the most important components would have been adopted in the current system. And I hear this, and the only thing I think is, fuck you. This does not make sense. The people that are behind this, the people that are controlling, they are pulling the levers, they do not want to give up control. This is a centralized system. The fundamentals, by including any sort of quick transaction digitally or whatever, does not change the fundamentals. The fundamentals are, for Bitcoin, hard cap. The fundamentals for fiat is unlimited cap. They do not jive. I don't care what sort of digitization you put on a fiat system. It doesn't change the fundamentals. It is essentially, it's Bitcoin is the opposite. And I'll give you an example. This walled garden, you think that if anybody comes there with a velvet glove and says, look, we have these ideas, they'll fucking laugh you out and say, get the fuck out of here, especially if it was 13, 14 years ago when Bitcoin was at its infancy. Look, we can't even get a fucking bank account today. And you think the people running the system decade ago would listen to a bunch of shadowy super coders and how to change the system? No, they would have laughed at them, tell them to fuck off and say, get the hell out of here. There's no way they would take anything, any sort of suggestion, any way to change the system, because this is a walled garden. Any sort of change, they do not want to give up the power. And I understand that, but there is nothing. There was nothing that Bitcoiners could have done a decade ago to change people's mentality that are controlling the monetary system. They live and breathe it. This is their baby. They will not change it. And this is the hill they're going to die on. And there's no way Bitcoiners could have changed it. But this is why we are going to win. We are decentralized. We are, everybody is one node. You run a node, you are part of the system. With this banking system, this centralized system, you don't have an opportunity to run it. And there's no way we could have brought forth any argument that would have changed their mind. And you know what, Mike Green, you don't understand. This system was set and it was never going to change. Not by a fucking shadowy supercoder. No fucking way.
I think, yeah, the most frustrating thing for me about Mike, two things really. One, you know, we talked to him for probably 10 or 15 minutes after that show, and he agrees with almost everything we think. He just doesn't think Bitcoin has a role to play. And the other thing that drives me nuts is that episode of Macro Voices that you're talking about, him and Eric are going back and forth. Honestly, Len, if you and me didn't swear and I actually cared about the, like, you know, the pressure sound in our voice, like if I really wanted us both to have radio voices, it would sound like us talking about how Jerome Powell just, they don't get it. The US government doesn't get it. They're making mistakes. They're worried about reputation instead of pragmatic outcomes. And they're not thinking about the results of their policy positions and their decisions and the lag and the effects. It's amazing and frustrating that Mike, a guy that smart, a guy I respect, a guy, you know, I liked a long time before we started doing this podcast. You know, I listened to Macro Voices for many years now. And he's a guy who I would say, like, he gets it. That guy gets it, but just doesn't get the Bitcoin thing. And I think that, you know, it was disappointing to hear him say that if we had just been nicer, we would have got a better result. But
yeah. And we can't, yeah, a decade later, we can't even get a bank account. Know, and they're going to change their system if we come in with a nicer tune. Impossible. That was never in the realm of possibility. Not even in an alternate universe could this have ever happened. And to bring this forth as an argument, fuck. How out to lunch are you?
I'm with you.
This is borderline Bitcoin, sorry, no corner of the year territory.
Yeah.
That's the way I'm looking at it.
We should have him come back on. Maybe I'll send him a message.
I'm like, I'll be happy to talk about it. How do you even consider this?
Let's do a half hour while you're grilling.
Let's do it, man.
God bless everyone.
I'll do the grilling this time.
We'll do a short after show tomorrow. Dave Bradley, who's in the chat. Dave, I don't know what we're going to talk about, but I'm looking forward to it, buddy. And Wednesday, couple of Agra boys coming on the show. Until then, take care of yourselves and stick around for the after show.
Yeah, take care and PV.